All right, so we are holding. Okay, so we're holding on your blind number days, about just past the middle of your other blind in Purja. We have in the Mishnah, we talked about a case where you have two b'chorim, an animal, a kosher animal that had never gives birth to twins, two twin males. So the question is, which one or both of them b'chorim? So we said, Rabbi Yosi said that both of them are considered b'chorim. Both of them have to be given to the Kohen. Both of them are considered complete b'chorim. Everybody else says that it's only a sopik, and therefore the question becomes, which one do you give to the Kohen? We had Reb Tarifrin and we had Reb Akiva. They're both born at the same time. So in the Mishnah, the Chachamim had used the expression "ef shalot samson," that it's impossible to say definitively that the two of them happen at the same time. Necessarily, it must be that one of them happened a fraction of a second before the other, and this we don't know. So therefore, so they say it can't be that both of them are b'chorim. It's only one of them. We just may not know which one. So therefore, the question becomes, which one do you give to the kohen versus which one? What do you do with the other one, which is the sopik? So what we said was, we started saying that according to Rabbi Yitzchak Zvili, even when you're talking something b'gei shamayim, like over here, a natural event, a birth, you can still say efshel samson, that it's possible to say that both of them happen in the same split second. All the more so, we said Rabbi Yitzchak would say when b'gei adam, when you have something that's made by human hands, where there you're trying to make it as accurate as possible, for sure Rabbi Yitzchak would say efshel samson. The question was, what about according to the chachamim? They wouldn't agree with b'gei shamayim, we see in the Mishnah, but would they hold differently in the case of b'gei adam? So the first case we brought was in the case. Okay, so according to Rashi, the difference is b'gei shamayim is something that happens naturally. For example, over here, two babies are born. Which one came out first? You don't know. It's something natural. It's not necessarily that Rabbi Yossi would say it could conceivably happen within the same split second, and the Chachamim would say that not. B'gei adam means, for example, as we're going to have examples over here, where you have something which is man-made, and which is man-made, or as we're going to see, man-measured or whatever. And the question is, can you say that you have it exactly 50-50 over there also? So we'll have some examples. So the Chachamim, we know, hold it's not b'gei shamayim, but do they maybe hold b'gei adam? The long Tosfos over here, efshel samson, brings a couple of other possibilities about that, because you have various Gemaras throughout Shas. You have this concept of Efshel Samson and Efshel Samson, and not necessarily are we always making a distinction between B'day Shemayim and B'day Adam. So among other explanations, Tosfos says one possibility is that B'day Shemayim may mean not just that it's a natural event, like over here the birth, but also that because it happens so quickly, nobody necessarily notices whether it really was in the same split second or not. Versus b'gei adam might be. It could be something even natural, but something where you have the time to actually go and check, well, how closely is it? How 50-50 is it exactly? Or is it slightly closer to one than the other?
It never happens. It isn't exactly
together. So actually, it's interesting that Amram in Pirush HaMishnayot says it learns that way. He says that when the Chacham say Yefshel Samson means essentially that. You never have literally both of them coming out at the same time. But Rashi and Tosfos are here. Fine, they were also fraternal twins. They weren't identical twins, fine. But the point is, in principle, you could have, maybe. So the Rambam learns that, right, that what the Chacham are saying is, it's never going to happen. According to Rashi and Tosfos, they're saying it may well happen, but in reality, if you were to freeze frame it and then look, you would find that one was a split second before the other. Okay, anyway, so that's one point that Tosfos brings up, is that maybe B'day Shemayim, B'day Adam is not so much, is it a natural event or not, but rather it's more an issue of, is it something where there's no time to measure it, because it just happens and then it's over, like over here, the birth, versus something like the examples we're going to give in the Gemara, things where you have more time to actually look into it and measure it precisely. Then Tosfos also brings another point. Tosfos also brings another point from Rav Shimon Miyanvila. Miyanvila is someplace in France, I guess, Juanville or whatever. Anyway, he says that actually even that Abonim would say Efshel Samson even B'day Adam. But what we would say is in the various cases where we find that it works, for example, in the case of where you have, for example, a mother, where you have the question, is it mostly fenced in, is it mostly not fenced in, there you can be makel, because first of all, it might actually be a majority, even though it only looks to us like half, and second of all, because anyway, the Gemara itself asks the question, do you actually mean a majority, or just 50-50, so that sort of thing. So in other words, according to that, then according to that, again, there's not necessarily such a difference between B'gei Shemayim and B'gei Adam, that various other Gemaras that mention this concept may be holding that even the day Adam you can, but there can be different times of the day Adam. Okay. The first case we mentioned was, okay, I guess we may as well start over. Toshma, I guess we'll start from the line that begins extra. Right? Okay, so Toshma, the mission, we learn in a mission, Chutshal Sikra Chogra Be'emsa, the Mizbeach, there was a red line painted around the middle of it, Lahavdol Ben Domim HaYoinim Ben Domim HaTachsoinim, to distinguish between the upper half with certain, the blood of certain Korbanot has to go on the upper half of the Mizbeach, or Ben HaTachsoinim, and the ones where it has to go on the lower half. So you have that line painted over there. Now, the Amrti, the actual Samson Bidei Adam. Now, if you're going to tell me that Chachamim would say that even Bidei Adam, again, according to any of these definitions, the Mizbeach is man-made, it's standing there so you can take your time measuring it, etc. If you're going to say that even Bidei Adam, you can't be Mitzamtzim, you can't be exact, then how do you know that that line is exactly in the middle? Mitzamtzim would mean, in other words, to measure it exactly, to say that the Mizbeach is to be able to measure it down to the atom, let's say, and be able to say that, So if you were to say that E actually sounds to Bidei Adam, that you would say even Bidei Adam, you're not always sure when something looks 50-50, it isn't necessarily. Well, then Zimnin de Kajah Bal Yonim Lamasav Akhtonim Lamayla, conceivably you could end up where you're doing the blood that belongs on the bottom, on the upper half of the Mizbeach is actually going on the lower half and vice versa. Because you don't know if you say, so wouldn't that show that the Chachamim necessarily must hold that when it comes to Bidei Adam, actually sounds to that when you measure the Mizbeach and you come to a certain point, 50% of the way up, then that's it. It is exactly 50%. Otherwise, it wouldn't work. How could you possibly sprinkle blood all the way close to that line? That's fine, but the point is, the red line itself might be a drop too high or a drop too low. If you're saying that you can put the blood of certain carbonates directly above the red line and others directly below the red line, you might accidentally be lossing over into the other half. That's the answer. That's the answer. The answer is the marvach bapurja. The answer is you don't make the line as narrow as possible. You make it slightly wider so that you're covering any of the possible.
Even with a line that's thicker, if you intend some of the drops that you intend to up.
No, but we're not talking about that. So if some of it goes in the wrong place, we're not talking about that. So for example, let's say a chatas. We learned in Zvokin, and what does the Tanya do with a chatas? He takes the blood, and he walks around the Mizbeach and daubs it with his finger. But we learned over there, and also we said, also the blood has to go on the top half of the Mizbeach. And we said over there, for example, that the Kohen can conceivably stand on the ledge on the side of the Mizbeach, and he can reach downward a little bit below where his feet are standing on the side, and still do it over there. It's still considered kosher. So fine, what the Gemara is saying over here, we make the chotah thicker, we make the red line a few inches wide. That way we're covering any possibilities. That way there's no possibility that anything that's above the line is actually really in the lower half of the Mizbeach and vice versa. So as long as you do it above the red line, then you're good, and the same thing with below the red line. Well, that doesn't show. It could be that maybe the Mizbeach, but it could be. So we can't necessarily prove that. Okay. Toshma, maybe that's Kalim, maybe that's Mizbeach. What about, okay, so consider the measurements of the kalim. For example, the Pasuk says, let's say that the shulchan has to be two amas long by one amah wide, implying that it has to be exact. And obviously human hands can't make anything exactly. So therefore, that should show that Echshel Samson Bidei Adam, that Echshel Samson, that we say when something is man-made, you can literally measure it to the fraction of an inch, to the fraction of an espa or whatever, and say it really is two amas, no more, no less. If we're saying the kalim has to be done exactly. The answer is, and also the Mizbeach, also the measurements of the Mizbeach, which have to be exact, and the Mizbeach, for that matter, has to be exactly square. We're assuming that it means literally exact. The machshin is assuming that what it means is if we were to measure the shulchan, for example, what do they use nowadays for precision measurements, lasers or whatever, if we were to use a laser interferometer on it, it would literally be two amas, no more, no less.
Yeah, but that means
actual assumption.
Fine, but it cannot be exact. Because the meters themselves are not exact each other.
Okay, no. We have a machlokas nowadays. We have a machlokas between the Chazanish and Rav Chaim Noah and others, what exactly the size of an amma is and so forth. But in those times, obviously, they knew what the size of an amma is.
They knew exactly what the meaning is.
Yeah, but that's what we're assuming. That's what we're assuming. If the Pasuk says it has to be two ammas, then it means two ammas. The answer is no. Shiny Hossam, no, it's different over there. Jerachmona Omar Ovid, no, the Pasuk is make the Kaven over Chol Hechid the Matzah to Mevet Nichalei. As long as it's exact as you're able to get it, then it's good enough. It doesn't have to be. It could very well be if you were to measure it with an interferometer, it would be slightly longer or slightly shorter than 2 hours. We don't care about that. The Torah is only expecting you to do as much as a human being can do. Interesting points, by the way. A couple of the Achronim talk about why Rashi, first of all, mentions the Shulchan among all the Kalim. Is they say because the Oren, we know, where there's a statement of the Gemara, Makom Oren Einim Amidah, the place of the Oren, where the Derech Nefesh didn't count towards the space of the Beth Mitzvah. So fine, you could say that was made exact. And the Shulchan is the first Kali that's mentioned after the Oren. The other thing is why we're mentioning specifically the Mizbeach. So actually, there's a couple of answers on that. And in fact, we could have used this answer for the previous one as well about the Chuppah Sikra. One answer from Rav Elul Brisker is that actually, no, the Mizbeach is a unique thing. It was actually made. So we have the possibility here. I call the Chassav Miyad Hashem Olai Hiskil. David says to Shlomo, the entire blueprint of the Beit Mikdash was all given to me in writing from Hashem, who gave me to understand. So what is that pasuk doing over here? Rashi actually says that pasuk has no business being over here. What is it doing over here? It's not telling us anything that we're saying that the Torah tells you make the keli and make it as exact as possible, and we don't care if it's to the millimeter or whatever. So what is the pasuk doing over here? Then it would be Hakol B'Yichud Miyad Adam, because then it means as precise as a human being can make it. Okay, so Rashi says the pasuk doesn't belong over here. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Gershom leaves it in over here. He says that's what it means, basically. The Torah is telling you, is giving you a tzibui, make the kelim, make them according to this blueprint, and make them within that as exact to this blueprint as you can, but you're not expected to make superhuman efforts. If with the technology of those days, all you can get it is to the nearest centimeter, then that's all you have to do. Okay, with that said, though, Rav Elul Brisker says over here that maybe the reason why the Gemara is bringing the positive is because it's saying the Mizbeach is a unique case. The Mizbeach was actually built specifically based on commandments from Nevi'im, so therefore Hashem could arrange that it was actually exact, literally, to the atom. But everything else, not necessarily. Okay. So, still no proof whether the Chachamim would say actual Sam can be Dei Adam or not. Okay, Amar Tatina, Toshma. We have a proof from a Braisa in Negoyim that says, Now you have usually an oven. We know we've learned in many places that an earthenware oven is able to become tamei. And so what happens? Chilka l'shnayim. If you broke the oven into two pieces, the hain shoven, and both pieces are exactly the same size, tamei. Both men are still tamei. Lefisha e eshal asamson, because e eshal asamson. So there you go. Now an oven is something that's made bidei adam, and it's broken bidei adam, and it sounds like I'm saying but that's the thing. E eshal asamson means you think the two pieces to your naked eye look exactly the same, but if you were to measure them with a calendar there, that should be a proof. On the other hand, Amar of Kahana, says that's still not a valid proof. Shiny klicheres tov yesh begumus. It's different when you have a klicheres that's broken. It doesn't break cleanly. You have jagged edges. You have one side sticks out, the other side sticks in. So there, yeah, okay, you can't. Right, so the principle, in principle, may be actual assumption, but that kind of thing. It doesn't break cleanly, so you can't say. If one piece is definitely bigger than the other, then only that one is still tamei and the other one is tamei. But if we're saying, if both of them are exactly the same size, but we're saying, okay, but the fact is exactly the same size, if not, you can't really identify them as being exactly the same size because of jagged edges. Okay, I mean, I was wondering about it when I was learning before. Why don't we say, for example, you take each half and put it in water and measure the volume of it? But I guess the answer is because you also have to consider the thickness of it is not necessarily uniform throughout the whole thing, so that would also throw it off.
Even in water, you couldn't measure it.
In water, you can measure the exact volume of it, even with the jagged edges and everything. But the fact is, you're talking about the exact dimensions of it. You're talking about the length and width. But you also have to consider when you're in water, you have to consider the thickness as well. Okay. And
so the rejection is that
even fine, you're never going to see them exactly the same size because there's jagged edges. But in other words, if that wasn't an issue, if you could have it broken cleanly, maybe we would say actual Thompson. Okay.
So we don't know.
Okay, Tashma. We learn in a Mishnah in Sota. Nimtzim Chovin Ben. Oh, this is actually from Kasef and Negoyim. The other one we learned in Chovin actually about the oven being divided. Okay, Nimtzim Chovin Ben Shtei Ayoris. We learn it at the end of Sota. So now we're learning it for Sfira. So you find a dead body outside the city. So you do the whole Eglarucha procedure. So what happens? Nimtzim, you basically measures the closest city, and then the closest city brings Eglarucha. What happens? Nimtzim Chovin Ben Shtei Ayoris. The Braisa says, what if the body is found exactly between two cities? So they measure and it turns out to be the same distance. Shtei and Nevi'ah Shtei Agolas Divrei Rav Eliezer. So Rav Eliezer says, each one has to bring an Eglah Arufa because we don't know which one is the closer one. Now, my time, why should Rabbi Elazar say, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar, whatever, why would he say that both of them have to bring an egg la'arufa? Shouldn't we assume that's because he holds, when you're talking something bidei adam over here, and here we're talking about it's bidei adam because somebody killed him and left him over there. Or again, if you want to toast with his first explanation, because it's something you can measure at your leisure, it's not something that happens and then disappears like a bird. So therefore, apparently Rabbi Eliezer holds that Efshel of Samson, in such a case, you are actually able to measure to the millimeter and find if it comes out to the same way, then it means they're both the closest. And Kroivov after the Kroivus, and we would also have to assume that he would say, when the Pasuk says that the closest city has to bring the Egla Rufa, that means even if you happen to have two closest cities. In other words, he would say the word Troiva is not a mere that's one and only one city. He would say you could conceivably have two, just like Rabbi Yehoshua Aglili says in our Mishnah that you could have two Bechorim.
And then again,
so then in that case, that would show that Rabbi Eliezer, so that would show that Efshel Samson, they are them. The answer is not necessarily Rabbi Eliezer, Savalok, Rabbi Yehoshua Aglili, because you could say Rabbi Eliezer holds like Rabbi Yehoshua Aglili of our Mishnah, Dama Efshel Samson, Midei Shemayim, where Rabbi Yehoshua Aglili says that you can be Efshel Samson even when it's a natural event like a birth. Vacholsha can be Dei Adam, how much more so when it's Bidei Adam, where it's man-made, and therefore it's possible to make it exact, and it's possible to measure it. So therefore, fine, we're asking according to the Chachamim. Okay, we know Rabbi Yehoshua Aglili holds Efshel Samson. We're trying to figure out according to the Chachamim. Not necessarily do we have to say Rabbi Eliezer holds like the other Chachamim. Okay.
This Brisa, according to Rabbi Yehoshua,
who would say agrees with Rabbi Yehoshua?
Because
we're saying that we don't know. Maybe he agrees with the Chachamim, but maybe not.
Not
necessarily. But I mean, I think Rabbi Yehoshua and Rabbi Yehoshua really, I think was a younger contemporary of Rabbi Yehoshua. But yeah, whatever, it doesn't matter. The point is, they could still hold the same thing. Okay.
In that case, which city are going to mention?
No, so actually what it is you have members of the national Sanhedrin, or the one, I think it says over there, you send out five members of the national Sanhedrin, and they do the measuring. And then once they find which is the closest city, then the Ziknei Ha'irai take over and bring their Egla Rufa. Okay, fine. Okay, so the Gemara says, name a Ketanoi. Okay, should we say that actually it's Machlokes Ketanoi, whether within the Chachamim themselves, whether Efshel Samson Bidei Adam or not? Because this Braisa that we just quoted, let's quote the whole Braisa now, Nimsa Mechuvan Ben Shtei Ayoris, the Braisa says if you find the body exactly between the two cities, Loi Hoyo Oshin, then the Tanakama of that Braisa says you don't bring an Egla Arufa at all. Rabbi Eliezer and Shtei Mevia Shtei Eglis, Rabbi Eliezer says, as we just said, that each one brings an Egla Arufa, so my love, the Hakam Ifadi. Shouldn't we say then that that's the source of their Machlokes? The Tanakama saw an EF Shalot Samson, the Tanakama of this Braisa would hold that EF Shalot Samson, therefore, neither one is necessarily the closest city. So therefore, so each city, in other words, can say, why should we have to pay money and bring an Egla Arufa? We're not necessarily the closest city. And where's Rabbi Eliezer saw the actual Samson? Where's Rabbi Eliezer would hold? No, if you measured and found it to be the same to the millimeter, then you have to assume that's really how it is. It means that it would be exact even at smaller scales, and therefore both of them would be obligated to bring, because neither one can get out of it. Neither one can say it, not us.
The one who says you don't have to bring two, you bring one.
You don't bring any. No. So far, you don't have any opinion that says you bring one. So far, you have the kind of camera of the blight that says you bring zero, and Rabbi Eliezer says you bring two. So if you say zero, the reason would be because Efshel Samson, you would say either the people of each city could say, yes, you measured and found that at the millimeter scale you found it's closest, it's exactly equidistant. But if you were to measure at smaller scales, you would find there is a slight difference. Therefore, we're not the closest city. Why should we have to bring the Egla Arufa? Whereas Rabbi Eliezer says Efshel Samson, and therefore he would say, no, we tell them, look, we measured to the centimeter, to the millimeter or whatever. We found that to whatever scale of measurement we're using. We found it exactly the same. You have to bring an Egla Arufa. And if the prophet says Troy, but yeah, it means even if you have more than one. Well, the point is, in other words, that if we would say the Tanakama of this Braisa holds Efshel Samson. So fine, in the case of our Bechor, you have no choice. Necessarily one or the other of them is the Bechor. Fine, in the case of the cities, they could each get out of it and say we don't need the Kapara. In the case of the Bechor, you don't have that option, because one way or the other, one animal belongs to the Kohen and has to be just Bechor. Okay, so the Gemara says the Tisbara. Yeah. How are you thinking that that's the reason for the machlokes? E kasava tanakama, e efshel samson. If you're telling me that just the tanakama holds the efshel samson, am I loy hoyo orfim? Why are they bringing zero egla arufas? Your view egla achas b'shufas v'yachmas. All we have to do then is the two cities together. They pull their funds together. They buy one egla and they make a tanai. Yeah, they make a tanai. The members of each city say if you're really the closest city, then we're makna our share in this animal to you. and vice versa. If we're the closest city, then you're Machnea to us, and then you bring one Eglah Arufa. Even if you say Eichel or Samson, one or the other of them is the closest city. Why would we say in zero? Yeah, just like in our mission. Why are we saying there's no? We don't say in our mission there's zero before, and we say there's one.
What does Eichel
or Samson mean mean it's impossible to get a truly accurate measure. So therefore, we would say that even if you measured and found it exactly 50 feet from one city and exactly 50 feet from the other city, but we would say if we were to measure at smaller and smaller scales, we would find that it's an inch closer, it's a millimeter closer, it's an atom closer. Yeah. And therefore, on the face of it, the Tanakhama says you don't bring any Eglah Arufa. But why not? The fact of the matter is, one or even if you say Eichel or Samson, the fact is one or the other is actually the closest city. We just can't figure out which. But fine, I can bring one B'shutpus and then make a tonight. No, so we can't say that that's the problem. We can't say that that's the basis of their machlokas Eichel or Samson. Rather, Ela lahani tanoi dekola alma Eichel or Samson. No, these two tanoim in this braisa both hold Eichel or Samson. They both hold you can get an exact measurement. You can have, if you measured and you found that it's 50 feet and 50 feet, then it would mean even we have to assume that even at smaller scales it would be just this close. So what's the machlokas? The machlokas is in that particular case. How do you learn the posit? When the posit says the kroiva, the closer city, has to bring the Eglah Arufa, so what does that mean to imply? But if you have two cities that are equally close, then they don't or not? The Tanakhama stava kroiva v'leik kroiva. The Tanakhama holds that, okay, the word kroiva means there's only one. There can never be more than one. And therefore, if you have two of them really are equidistant, we're going to say Eichel or Samson, fine, then you neither one brings an Eglah Arufa because there's no one kroiva and the posit. Nothing to do with Eichel or Samson in general or not, right? You could say usually they would say yeah, they would say you would say that at least in this variety you could say Eichel or Samson. So we started by saying maybe it's a machloket tanoim. It's not necessarily a machloket tanoim. Not Eliyah. Rebbe Eliezer saw a kroiva after a kroiva. Whereas Rebbe Eliezer would say no. When it says kroiva, it could even imply that there were two kroivas. So long as and therefore both of them are great. So that would be why zero versus two. Nothing to do with Eichel or Samson or not, right? My havi Allah, okay, what's the bottom line? What is the halacha in the case of the Eglah Arufa? Amr of Chirba Oven Amr of Amram Tana. Well, we learned in a braisa. Here's the answer. Nimtza Mechuvan Ben Shtei Ayaris. You have another braisa that says that the body is exactly between two cities. Rebbe Eliezer and Shtei Mevias Shtei Ayaris. So he said Rebbe Eliezer says each one brings their own Eglah Arufa. V'chumim Yuvyu Eglah Achas V'shutpus V'yachnu. Now we have another braisa where the Chachamim are saying, as he would have expected them to say, that they bring one Eglah Arufa in partnership. Because the Gemara, maybe the Chacham didn't know of it until now. That's how the discussion goes. So the Chacham say, you bring one Eglah Arufa, B'shutpus, and you make a tonight. Okay, so the question is, now we have to figure out, these are Rabbanan over here. Now we have a third opinion. We have the Rabbanan in the first, we have the Chachamim in the first place, so we have Rebbe Eliezer in the first place, we have Rebbe Eliezer in the second place, saying the same as he did in the first one, and now we have the Chachamim. So what is their opinion on the Eichel or Samson subject? My Kosavri Rabbanan. So what do they hold? E Kosavri Rabbanan, the Eichel or Samson. Do they hold the Eichel or Samson once we measured and found that it's exact, and as far as we're concerned, it's exact even at smaller scales? And if they also hold a kroiva after the kroiva, and they hold that kroiva can imply, like Rabbi Yehuda says, even if there are two closer ones, like the Tarsi, then you should have to bring two. The e kroiva of like kroiva, and if they hold, like the Chachamim of the previous braisa, that kroiva means there's only one city that ever brings, never two, after the chodol, like, then why are they even bringing one? The fact is, both of them are the closest one, and the Torah is excluding and saying that you never have the two closest one bringing. So where are they getting one from? Ela lab shmamina kasavir rabbanan eichel or samson after the b'di'adam. So there we go. Now we can see that the chachamim of this last b'naisa hold that eichel or samson after the b'di'adam. So therefore they would say that yes, we measured and we found it's exactly 50 feet and 50 feet. But if we were to measure at smaller and smaller scales, inevitably we would find some difference, but we can't measure to such small scales. Therefore, we know that one of them is the closest city. We just don't know with which one. It's a suffix. So fine, it's not a question of crave over like crave. Only one of them is going to be bringing. But because we don't know which one, therefore they have to pull their funds together and buy one and make a snack. Okay, so that proves. So that proves that the Rabbanan, right.
You can believe in crave, not cravers. Yes.
And since there should only be one, but we just don't know which one it is,
then it shows
that they hold Eichel or Samson even b'day adam, even here when you're talking about a human-caused event or an event that can be measured at our leisure. Shmamino, so that proves it, that there is, that proves it, that is what the Rabbanon holds. So the bottom line is, we assume that these Rabbanon represent the general run of the Rabbanon. And in fact, the halacha is like that. is like that in the case of Eglah Rofa. So therefore, what this would mean is that in general, we would say, according to Rabbi Yosi Agrili, we would say Eshel Atzamtim, whether Bidei Shemayim or, and how much more so, Bidei Adam. According to Chachamim, we would say neither one, not Bidei Shemayim and not Bidei Adam. Which is, again, what brings Tosfos into the long discussion about what the exact applications of that are, because there do seem to be some places in Shas where we do say Eshel Atzamtim. So again, you have Rav Shimon Miyanvila's answer that there's a difference between what specific area of Halacha we're talking about, where you may have a spec space, etc. Okay. Right. So the bottom line is that I would say, in other words, even if to our eyes the measurement looks exact, it's not necessarily exact. At smaller and smaller scales, there is going to be some difference, and therefore we have a suffix, and therefore the only choice is that we can't measure it down to the smallest scale. Therefore, if for Samson, therefore they have to bring one in partnership. Applying that to our Mishnah, well, our Mishnah is Bidei Shemayim. So in our Mishnah, we said that by similar logic, we don't know which one is the Bechor. One or the other is. We have to assume that if we were to freeze frame it, we would see that one of them actually came out a split second before the other. But we can't do that, so we end up with a suffix. So therefore, we give one of them to the Kohen, and the other one you treat as a suffix for
us. So when you were saying in this the Kulei Alma Ishal something.
That was with the first price. That was with the first price, where we had the choice between two Eglah Rofas and zero Eglah Rofas. Now that we have another price that says the choice between two and one, then now it's a question of Eshel Atzamtim and not. Okay. Fine. Then we said in the Mishnah.
You couldn't bring this price up for the second case?
If we had known this Braisa before, the Gemara would have brought it before. But that's how the Mahalach of the Gemara goes. They bring the first Braisa that they know of, and then they bring it, and then they find another Braisa. Okay.
If you find this Braisa as our second case...
So what if it comes out, in other words, there are three opinions. It comes out there are three opinions about the Eglah Rofa situation. Rabbi Eliezer holds that Eshel Atzamtim, so therefore both of them are considered the closest city. He also says Kroiva means even Kroiva, so if it happens that there are two cities that are both the closest, then they both have to bring. The Chachamim who argue with him in the first Braisa say, we agree with you on Eshel Atzamtim, but we disagree on Kroiva v'lo Kroiva. We say the Pasuk is specifically telling us that only one city ever brings an Eglah Rofa. Therefore, if you have both cities are considered close, then neither one is considered close, and neither one brings. And then we have the Chachamim in the second Braisa who say, we disagree with you on the whole concept of Eshel Atzamtim. We say Eshel Atzamtim. Therefore, necessarily one of them is actually closer than the other. We just don't know which. Therefore they pool their funds and bring one and make it nine.
So even though they disagree on Eshel Atzamtim.
But no, in the first Braisa they agree.
The second
Braisa disagrees on Eshel Atzamtim.
What do they do with this Braisa?
Kulei Alma means so far. But what does Kulei Alma mean? I mean, it doesn't mean the whole world. It means everybody who's involved every year. So far, before we said everybody who we know, what is involved. We didn't know this other Braisa that says that there's a different meaning. Think of it. I mean, when the Gemara says Kulei Alma agree that such and such, I mean, if you went and asked the man on the street, he doesn't agree with it, but he's not the Alma that we're concerned with.
All
the people so far, essentially. Okay. Then we said in the Then we said in the Mishnah of Tarfenem Akoyin Borolos Ayofa, we said that the Koyin gets to pick the healthier of the two animals, given that you have a suffix, he picks which is the healthier one and keeps it as a Bechor. So the question is, my time is Rav Tarfen, why would Rav Tarfen hold that? On the face of it, if it's a matter of suffix, then Hamoyt Mechabel of Araya. So why does the Koyin get the better one? The answer is Kasava, because Rav Tarfen holds. It's not even a question of suffix. The one that is healthier and fatter is the one that came first. So like it had the strength to push its way out first and come out first. So therefore, he says, and it was not even a matter of stopping. You know for a fact that the fatter one, the healthier one, whatever, is the one that came out first.
Well, not necessarily, because you're going to have someone that's stronger that may be bigger than the other. It's more hard for him to...
Granted, and in fact, we're going to say that Rav Tarfen can change his mind. Then we said Rav Akiva Omer Mishamnin. Then we said Rav Akiva says Mishamnin. Now, usually the word Mishamnin means something like we made Mishamnin Benehem, actually, is the word in the Mishnah. Usually it means the Lashon Shuma. Yeah, like we split the difference between them. We assess and we split the difference between them. So, however, what it means is a Koyin Noto Kosha. Rav Akiva is saying the opposite of Rav Tarfen, the Koyin gets the weaker. That's where takes the best. Rav Akiva can disagree with that, and they're both annoying. But Amalei Rav Chiya Ba'Abel Rav Yeshanan. So Rav Chiya Ba'Abel.
Do we have the price of saying that the client we give the best to the client?
Ordinarily, yeah, when you're giving truma, for example, you should give the best. But we're talking about over here, you have two animals that are suffered for her. So the bakhtiyar is saying, you know, if you want to give the fatter one to the kohen, give them to hay, but you're not obligated to. You could give him the weaker one. Okay, so the bakhtiyar ba'aba tells us in the name of Rabbi Yechanan the bat. But now that he said that, omelet the bakhtiyar ba'aba Rabbi Yechanan, he says that I just said this over in your name, but I don't understand. The Mishnah said mishamnin b'neim, which seems to imply that we make some kind of compromise between them. So in that case, they should be dividing. They should be dividing the healthy one or something like that. Omelet. So Rabbi Yechanan answers him with a turn of phrase. Abd achos kachnaisa b'bavel, while you were busy eating kachnaisa in bavel, we'll explain the second one, or tagimna misefa. We explained it here in Eretz Yisrael, that Rav Chiya Ba'aba came from bavel and then moved to Eretz Yisrael, became a Talmud of Yechanan. So while you were eating kachnaisa in bavel, we in Eretz Yisrael were explaining it based on the sefa of the mission. So what is kachnaisa? Rashi says it means dates. The meaning of the word, right, so one second, bavel was famous for its dates.
Okay.
In various places, the Gemara mentions that Bava was full of date palms. So therefore, so Rashi learns that Rabbi Yochanan is telling him basically, while you were busy enjoying yourself in Bava, we in Eretz Yisrael, well, we're horroring, we were working hard over this and figuring it out from the faith. Tosfos says on that, wait a minute, Kafnaisa on regular dates, Kafnaisa on ripe dates. So therefore, Tosfos learns, or not on ripe dates rather, but Tosfos learns that it means that they're poor quality dates. So therefore, Tosfos explains the figure of speech is, if you had been by us, then you would have been eating the good quality dates. Like if you were stuck over there in Bavel eating the lousy stuff. So therefore, like you didn't know how to learn properly, whereas if you had been by us, you would have learned it. But the Chavis Yair has a third explanation. He says that kafnaisa are unripe dates. So Rav Yechanan is using that figure of speech to tell them, look at this, you were in such a rush to eat the unripe dates. You didn't even wait for them to ripen, the same way you're in such a rush to act from the ratio of the Mishnah, rather than waiting until we get to the Sefer, and then you'll realize the answer. Anyway. Okay, so what is it? Just a funny sefer, because look at the end of our mission, a mess echaman. He said if one of these two animals, a suffix, dies, Reb Tausen omi yachloku, Reb Tausen says they divide the living one, half of it belongs to the Kohen, half of it belongs to the Israel. Reb Akiva omi amot machavel avaraya, and Reb Akiva says no, the Kohen wants the live one, he has to prove that one is a Bechor, he can't, so he doesn't get it. So the suffix dies, mishamnin b'neyan, to kiyadodi pligi. Now, if you're going to tell me that Meshamnin Beneihem means that they split it equally, that each one gets a share in the weaker one and in the stronger one,
why do they have to measure?
Well, no, the question is why they have to measure it, but the Hachinamu Lifligi Gavi Hadodi, and they should have the same way over here. We should say if Rabbi Akiva says in the ratio Meshamnin Beneihem, and you're thinking Meshamnin means we split it, half of one goes to the Koyan and half of the other goes to the Koyan and half of and the other half of each one goes to the Yisrael, then you would have to say the same thing in the Sefer. Why would Rabbi Akiva say any differently? And yet Rabbi Akiva is saying, Hamoitzi Mechaber Lo Varaya, me and the Kohen gets nothing. Ela, so therefore, now that we have the Sefer, we must be able to understand, my Meshamnin, what does the word Meshamnin mean? It doesn't mean to make a compromise, it doesn't mean to split the difference. It means Shuman Yehei Beinehen. It means that the Shuman, the fact that one animal is fatter and healthier than the other one, that is the issue Beinehen. That is basically what they have to come to base in and argue about. So therefore, so in other words, what we say is like this. You have two animals over there. One of them is definitely a bechor and belongs to the Kohen. So what we say is like this. The Yisrael can say to the Kohen, listen, the area in which they're both the same, namely the fact that they both have the same amount of bones and muscles or whatever, fine, you're entitled to that. But the fact that one of them is fatter than the other one, and you're claiming you have rights to that, you want the rights to that fatter part of it, you have to bring proof that one's a bechor. You can't, then all you're entitled to is the skin. Otherwise, that's what Tyson is saying. Reb Tyson is saying, yachoyku, for reasons that we'll learn on our days. Rabbi Akiva is saying, look, I'm a chavel avaraya. You claim that the better one is yours. Prove it. So you can't prove it, then fine. All you're entitled to is the other one, which has fine. It has the same basic body parts as this one. So fine, one way or the other, I still owe you a head and four legs and hind legs and this and that and the other, whatever. But I don't necessarily owe you the fat because that you can't. Yeah, you would have to prove. So that's what Meshamnin Beneihem means then. Then we said in the mission about Sheni. Oh, okay, well, we'll see on Amud Beis why Reb Tausen and Reb Akiva are saying what they said. Okay, then we said about Sheni Yirad Shistarev. We said the second one, the fact of the matter is the second one after whichever one, fine, you're giving the fatter one or the skinnier one to the Kohen. The fact is the other one might be the real Bechor. Again, assuming that he actually assigns him and there's necessarily only one Bechor. So again, not like Reb Yisrael really that said that both of them are the Bechor. So therefore, so we said that the second one, the fact is, it might be a bechor, so therefore you still have to treat it with drushas bechor, you don't have to give it to the kohen. But zira adshi yisod, you have to leave it to graze until it develops a mum, and then you're able to shecht it, and you're able to eat it. V'chayev v'matonis, now here's what we're going to focus on. The Mishnah says that second animal is chayev in matonis, you have to give the zroi l'chayayim v'keva to the kohen. V'rab yoyti poter, whereas Rab yoyti says it's poter. Rab yoyti is not the same as Rab yoyti agrees, by the way. My time is Rav Meir. So the question is, why does Rav Meir say what he's saying? Now, where do we see Rav Meir? So Rashi explains, well, it's some Mishnah Rav Meir. So therefore, we assume that the Tanakhama and all Mishnah is Rav Meir. Because we didn't see it until now. Other Mephoroshim explain that in the next Mishnah, we have the opinion of Rav Meir that actually says, Chai of Matonis. So therefore, the Gemara assumes that he would say the same thing to Leah. Okay. Fine. So what's Rav Meir's reason that he would say that the animal is Chai of Matonis? Amar Rav Yechanan, and we learned about this in Cholin as well. Hoyo B'Koyin Ba'ol of Mishneh Tzadon. Because the Kohen, either way, has a right to those parts of the animal. He can come on him from, he can come against him with a claim from either direction. The Amalei tells the Israel, E Bechoru, look, if this animal really is the Bechoru, the one that you're saying that you can keep, Kulei Dibihu, then after all, it shouldn't be in your possession. I should be getting the whole thing. Eloi Bechoru, and fine. If you're right, and this one is not the Bechoru, and you're keeping it, okay, but you still owe Matonis, Habli Matonis, then you still owe me the Matonis. So one way or the other, he's entitled to the Matonis.
Okay.
That's the point, because that's the point. Rav Meir would say, because what do you have? If this animal that we have in front of us, which is Yisrael is shechted now, if this one is the real Bechor, the whole thing goes to the Kohen.
Right.
If it's not the Bechor, the Yisrael is
shechted.
Which includes the Matonis, obviously. If it's not the Bechor, fine, the Matonis goes to the Kohen. So therefore, the Kohen, either way, has a valid claim against the Yisrael for those Matonis. Now, so the question is, so what about Rav Yossi? Rav Yossi, my timer. Now, why would Rav Yossi say different? The answer is, Amar Rava, Osu She'ene Zoicha Ke Zoicha. Because Rav Yossi will hold that even though the Kohen was not Zoicha in the other one, because it never got into his hands, because only the first one got into his hands, we make it for this purpose as if he was Zoicha. Because originally the Kohen could have had rights to it, because it might have been his, might not. So therefore, for this purpose, the Chachamim consider it as if it actually came into his hands. But Afa Gavdolei Motel Yodei, so even though that animal did not actually reach the Kohen's hand, command the Motel Yodei, we consider it for that purpose as if it reached his hand, and the Zavni the Yisrael B'mumay, and then he turned around and sold it to a Yisrael with a mum, and then he took the other one in exchange for it. Now, if a Kohen sells a Bechor with a mum to a Yisrael, then it's Potter from Matanis. It would have been Potter from the Matanis when the Kohen himself had it, and he sells it to the Yid. It's the same thing. To the Yisrael, it's the same thing. So that is why, in other words, what we say is, you have the fatter animal, you have the fatter animal, you have the skinnier animal, we'll call them F and S. So we said Rav Tarshin is saying you give F to the Kohen, Rav Akiva says you give F to the Kohen. The fact of the matter is each of them is a suffix. So what we do is, let's talk according to Rav Akiva, let's say. You gave F to the Kohen, now you gave F to the Kohen, the skinnier one, now you're keeping F, the fatter one, for yourself. So what you do, so Rav Yossi is saying, we consider it as though you actually gave the fatter one to the Kohen. We consider it as if you gave him F, as if you gave him the fatter one, then it developed a moon, and then he traded it back to you for F. He sold it to you, and you gave him F instead. So he winds up with F, but F at one point was in his possession, and therefore it can be possible from my mind. That's what Rav Yossi says. So why would Rav Yossi hold of that concept? Why would he say also Shane is Zoicha Kazesha? So the Ma'arit al-Ghazi says that the reason is because after all, you do have a mitzvah to give the Bechor to the Kohen. So this way, by doing this, we accomplish that it makes it considered, regardless, whichever one is the real Bechor, we make it that this way you've been able to accomplish the mitzvah of giving it to the Kohen.
So he says it's not the real
Bechor,
it's the other
one. So even though you didn't give this one, you didn't give the fatter one to the Kohen, nevertheless, we consider as if you gave it to him, and then the Kohen sold it back to you and bought instead, and you gave him instead the skinnier one. So in the end, he ends up with a skinnier one, according to Rav Akiva. But it's considered as though at one point he had the fatter one in his possession.
What do you do with the rest of the money?
What do you mean, what do you do with the rest of the money? You didn't actually buy and sell anything.
It's as if, fine.
You can have a kinyan without money. You know, you can do kinyan chalifin, you can do kinyan chotz, or whatever. Yeah. Okay.
In order to show that he ends up with a skinny one, basically.
Yeah.
That's the
idea. But the point is that since he is keeping the fatter one, and Rabbi Yossi is saying, we consider as though first he gave the fatter one to the Kohen, and then the Kohen gave it back to him after it developed a mum, or sold it back to him, whatever. So now it was in the hands of the Kohen, therefore that fatter one is potter from Matanos. Meanwhile, he gives the skinny one to the Kohen, because that one might be the Bechor after all. But now, when he goes and checks the fatter one, the Kohen has no claim on him, like the Chachamim would say, that like Rav Meir would say, that either way, look, I'm entitled to these Matanos, and either this is the Bechor, or it's a whole an animal which is required, which is obligated in Matanos, because Rav Yossi will say that no. The Yisroel will tell him, no, it's considered, the Chachamim made it considered as though I already gave you this fat one, and then you gave it back to me, or sold it back to me.
Even though it's tiny,
what we did. Right. That's the most important. Rabbi Yossi would say.
It's
a virtual exchange. Exactly. Right. Okay. Fine. Amar Rav Elazar, Hakol Moedim B'Sofet B'Chor. Now, everybody does agree when you have a Sofet B'Chor, She'en Chalikim B'Yad Koyen, where, now here we were talking about where you have a Sofet B'Chor, where the Koyen has the other animal, which is the exchange of it. Because you have two animals which are Sofet B'Chor, and you gave one to the Koyen, and you kept the other one. So there you have, we can talk about this kind of virtual transaction. Because if you gave it to the Koyen, and then he sold it to you back, and then you gave him the other one. But when you have a Sofet B'Chor where there's no Chalik in B'Yad Koyen, for example, let's say, for example, you have the case in our Mishnah where the mother animal gave birth to a male and a female together. So you don't have to give the male to the Koyen because, for all we know, the female could have been born first, and then there's no B'Chor at all. Nevertheless, the Zohar, the male, has to be treated as a Sofet B'Chor. So in that kind of case, you don't have Chalik in B'Yad Koyen because there's no other animal that you're giving to the Koyen instead. So in that case, Shechayev Matzah. In that case, says Rabbi Elazar, everybody would agree that that animal, that that Sofet B'Chor, you have to give the Matanis to the Kohen. Because then, no matter how you look at it, he's entitled to the Matanis.
So if it's the male and the female, you're chai for the male on the Matanis.
You're chai for the male. Well, you'd be chai for the female as well, but there's no Chiddush in that.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So the question is, Hakol Moedim Man. Who are you saying? When you're saying Hakol Moedim, everybody agrees. Which opinion are you talking about that you, it was said differently before, are you talking Rabbi Yossi? You're saying that you want, that Rabbi Elazar wants to inform us what Rabbi Yossi would hold in this case? Pshita. Well, then of course, I've come like a potter of Yossi Hossam. The only reason Rabbi Yossi is pattering him in our Mishnah, El of the Chalifin Yad Koyin, only because after all, you do have another animal in the hands of the Koyin, and therefore, the Osir Shein is Zoycha Kazoycha, and therefore you have this concept that we can consider as though there was this virtual transaction, as though you gave the one animal to the Koyin and then he sold it back to you. Obviously, if there's no other animal that you gave to the Koyin, then of course there's no possible virtual transaction like that. So of course Rabbi Yossi would say that you're chayiv and matanis on that one with the Chiddush. The answer is maudikema, no, because you would think to say, time is Rabbi Yossi, you might argue that, you know, maybe Rabbi Yossi's reason is because of a different consideration. Not because Chalif in B'yad Koyen, not because of the virtual transaction, but maybe it's because Rabbi Yossi holds the Mechayv Eslev Matonis, if you are going to obligate this guy in giving the Matonis, also with the Giziv Avoda, he's going to think that it is really a holden animal, because he knows that you don't have to give Matonis from a Bechor. So he's going to think this is really a holden animal, and he's going to go shear it, and he's going to go work with it, which would be an Issa Daraisa. So we would say maybe therefore we tell him don't give the Matonis. Be over on a Shev, Baal Talia. The Chacham will tell you, do a Shev Baal Tasa. Don't give him the Matonis, which normally you would have a Kumase to do, in order that you don't accidentally come to do a Loisa Sebi, a dying, of shearing it or work.
So by not giving the Matonis, automatically you're being...
You're realizing to yourself that, hey, this is a Sofet B'Chor, I've got to treat it like one.
But the Matanis also derives.
That's true, but there's a difference between Shev Baal Tasa and there's a difference between a passive and an active act. Sometimes you find, famously, we have, look, you know, the Chacham Tolof, don't blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah, what comes out on Shabbos. Don't take wool over. Yeah, because to do a Shev Baal Tasa, they can always, when they're just telling you Shev Baal Tasa, sit and don't do a mitzvah, let's say actively that they can do, but to tell it to, like this. If you give the Avodah, you'd be Chayav Malchus, but that's not the point. The point is that it's an action. He's actually getting up there and going and shearing the animal and going and working with the animal. So therefore, you would think that that's Rabbi Yossi's reason to pass her from Matanis, and therefore, Apogab the Ein Chalif in the Koyin, which therefore would mean even if there's no other animal that you gave the Koyin, because it's not a matter of a virtual transaction, it's a matter of a takana of the Chachamim to prevent you from being over on a loisah. Kamash Malon, that is what Rabbi Elazar wants to tell us, that no, that's not Rabbi Yossi's reason. Rabbi Yossi's reason is because of the virtual transaction that we said before. Therefore, if there's no virtual transaction, if there's no second animal, then yeah, you're Chayav in Matanis.
And we know that's the reason.
Okay, well, that's where it belongs with them. And that's how
he wouldn't be worried about the Giza and the...
Right, Rabbi Yossi is not going to be concerned about that. We're going to say, okay, you know, well, the guy will have to know. Okay, yes, I have to give him a ton of Toyin because I have to realize, look, maybe this is a Bechor, and he gets the whole animal. Maybe not, and then there... But nevertheless, because it's something Bechor, yeah, I can't shear it, and I can't work with it.
By not shearing the orphan, don't shear it, you give the shearing to the Kayan?
No, you're not allowed to shear it. It's a lois that says to shear an animal of Kayan. It's a lois sabbat before shear that, but a lois sabbat is before shear that.
That doesn't come uncomfortable for the game.
It probably does. Later on in the Masechta, actually, we're going to have a story that the Mishnah tells a story about a Bechor whose hair, whatever, was hanging off all over the place because it was a Bechor that had lived to a ripe old age and still hadn't developed a mum yet. Yeah?
So they didn't know what to do with
yeah.
it. What did they do? They
well, look,
get very hot.
We'll get to later on in the fifth paragraph or something. We'll get to the end of the story. What actually happened with that? Okay, fine. The question is, "Umi masus amritachi." How can you actually say that? But that's the Rav Yossi's reason, and saying that Rav Meir is saying that you're going to be chayev in matonis because you don't want you to forget about matonis altogether. The Hatani said, in other words, you're saying that maybe, again, Rabbi Yossi is saying that if you make him take Matonis, he's going to do Gizib Avodah. Rabbi Meir is saying, on the other hand, I'm not concerned about that, and on the other hand, I don't want you to forget about the mitzvah of giving Matonis, and therefore I'm going to tell you, regardless, you have to give the Matonis, even if it's something before. But how could you possibly think that that would be the reason anyway? Well, Tony Spesa, the Braita continues, Shehoyer Rabbi Yossi Oymer, that Rabbi Yossi used to say, Kol shachalif, or actually, it's the next Mishnah rather. Should Rabbi Yossi Emer Kol shachalif of Yavkoyin potum in amatonis, v'rameir mechayim. The next Mishnah at the bottom of our Omer clearly says that when chalif of Yavkoyin, then Rabbi Yossi is saying it's potum in amatonis, and Rameir says even in that case it's chayim, implying chalif in Yavkoyin ain chalif in Yavkoyin loy. It's just a matter of whether there's another animal that you gave to the Kohen, which you could say you exchanged for this one. So obviously, therefore, Rabbi Yossi holds that's the reason that it depends on Khalifin or not. Nothing to do with the matter of Gizel. Khalifin, when Khalif of the Yatoyan is Potom in Amatonis, when there's no Khalif in the Yatoyan, it was Messiah. So how, what do you mean that Rabbi Lazar has to inform us? You shouldn't think Rabbi Yossi had a different reason. We see spelled out clearly in the next Mishnah what Rabbi Yossi's reason is. The answer is, Ma'ur Dikema still, but if not for Rabbi Lazar's explanation, you would have thought, Rabbi Yossi the Dvarav did a mayor commonly. You might have thought still that Rabbi Yossi is saying, I have my own opinion, but I want to say, according to you, the mayor, why do you hold this way? Liddy G, he would say, according to my opinion, as far as I'm concerned, Afilo ain't Khalif in the Yavkoyin, then I don't care whether there's Khalif in the Yavkoyin. As far as I'm concerned, the reason to pater if Matonis is the suffix before, is the Mechaivet Leib Matonis also the Gizib Avodah, because if you make him give the Matonis, he's going to mistakenly think that it's a whole animal, and then he's going to shear it, and then he's going to work with it, and be over on a loisim. Because that, if not for Rabbi Lazar telling us Rabbi Yossi's reason, you would think, yes, Rabbi Yossi mentions in the next Mishnah, Khalif of Yad Koyen, but he's saying, as far as I'm concerned, it's not really a difference of Khalif of Yad Koyen or not. My reason why it's positive for Matonis applies whether there's Khalif of Yad Koyen or not, because my reason is because I don't want him to mistakenly think that he can shear the animal or work.
Why would he think mistakenly?
Because he might think, once he's giving Matonis, he might think of a colon animal. He knows he only gives Matonis from colon animals. But Rabbi Yossi, yeah,
because you gave
Matonis, that's going to mislead him into thinking that's holy. So
you can share it.
Yeah. So Rabbi Yossi might be saying that that's what I hold. But Lididoch, but even according to you, Rabbi Meir, fine, you're not worried about that kind of thing. You're not, and you want Shulit to stack up Teras Matonis. You want that there shouldn't be forgotten the whole concept of giving Matonis to the Kohen. Fine, but even so, Ojuli Mia, at least you should admit to me. At least you should agree with me, Hecha the Khalif in the Yavkoyen, where you do have another animal that you're exchanging with the Koyen, to also Sheena Zocha Kazocha, that at least we should say there that you consider, you have this virtual transaction that we consider as though you gave the first animal to the Koyen and then got it back and then gave him the second one.
I agree with that.
That's the point. Rabbi Yossi is saying to the mayor, why don't you agree in that case? But Amalei Rabbi Meir Loi, and Rabbi Meir says, even that I disagree with. I don't hold also Zocha Kazocha. Yeah. So if we didn't have Rabbi Lazar telling us his statement, we would have understood the next Mishnah that way. We would have understood that Rabbi Yossi is telling Rabbi Meir, myself, I don't care Khalifin or not. My reason applies whether there's Khalifin or not. But you who don't hold my reason about Gizav Avodah, at least you should agree with me on Khalifin. Don't you agree also Shein is Zocha Kazocha? And Rabbi Meir tells him no. Now that we have Rabbi Lazar's statement, we know none of that begins, none of that applies. Rather, it's plain and simple. Rabbi Yossi says when there's Khalifin it's Potter, when there's no Khalifin it's Chayev. And Rabbi Meir says either way it's Chayev.
Right, Chayev to...
In Matonis. You have to give him Matonis.
Both. So the Lezer holds that.
So we would say, therefore,
if you're giving, not Rabbi Eliezer.
We have Rabbi Yossi and we have a mayor now. Oh, Rabbi Eliezer, the Amora, is clarifying what they're saying.
If you're giving the second animal to the Kohen,
if you're giving one of the two animals to the Kohen, then you put it from Matonis on the one you keep. But if you're only giving one, if you're not giving any animal to the Kohen, because, for example, the case of Zohar and the Keva, yes, you have to give Matonis from that. Yeah.
And my point was, we don't care about Chalitim or not. One says...
No, exactly. We thought that maybe Rabbi Yossi doesn't care about Chalitim or not. Now we're saying no, Rabbi Yossi does care about Chalitim. Rabbi Meir doesn't care about Chalitim.
Rabbi
Meir says either way you have to give Matonis from the one that you're keeping.
Right.
Okay. Fine. Okay. V'amar apara. Well, the halacha actually, the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, I think. I'm not sure about that, though. Generally, when you have a machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and one Tana, you and one other Tana, usually the halacha is like Rabbi Yossi, but I didn't look it up in this case, actually. Okay. Fine. But Amun Apasa,
then it would be that...
So if we go according to Rabbi Yossi, then when Chalifa Liad Kohen is Apasa, and when not, then not. But again, I'm not quite sure about that. Okay. Fine. Then we said, okay, so now, V'omer HaPapa, now HaPapa says, here's another din. HaKol Moedim, the Sofet Meiser, Shepotim in HaMatonis. Now, till now we were talking about Behor, but you can also have Sofet Meiser. Everybody would agree that if you have an animal which is Sofet Meiser, then it's definitely Potter from HaMatonis. Now, what is Sofet Meiser? Rashi explains, we're going to learn at the end of the Masechta. Meiser Behemah, oh my God. So you have, now in the last parak, the long Masechta, we're going to learn all about Meiser Behemah. So you have there that you have the animals go out one by one from the door of the pen, and then the 10th one you hit it with a stick with red paint, and you mark it as Meiser, and you declare it Meiser. But what happens if later on one of the ones that was designated as Meiser jumps back into the pen and gets mixed up with all the other ones? Let's say the red paint fell off, or let's say your stick was out of paint, you didn't notice or whatever, so now it jumped back in. Now all the animals in there, you can't tell which is which, any one of them might be the Meiser.
Can you put numbers before you count them?
You can do it fine, you could, but if you didn't, the point is, you could have a case where one of the Meiser animals jumps into the pen, and now all the other ones are Sofek Meiser. And we learn over there in the Mishnah what exactly you do with them. Anyway, the point is, that Sofek Meiser, so you can't bring it to the Korban, because it might be Korban Bazara. So what you do is you wait till it develops in Mum, and then you check them and you eat it. So when it comes to Sofek Meiser, Rabbeinu Gershom says here's a different case of Sofek Meiser. We're also going to learn at the end of the Masechta that you can have a case where you got mixed up during the counting. We learned it sporadically before. We learned it at the end of Hodeus. We learned it in various places where you have, by mistake, you counted the ninth one as number 10, and then you mistakenly counted the 10th one as number 9, and then you mistakenly again counted the 11th one as 10. So you have various
two mistakes.
So you have two, yes. So then you have
one
so right. So there's so Rabbeinu Gershom says that's what it means. That when we say Sofek Meiser over here, we mean the 11th one. Anyway, the 11th one that you mistakenly called 10. Anyway, so whatever it is, Sofek Meiser. So the Papa says everybody agrees with that. I'm not sure Potter minimum topic, but that would definitely be Potter from Matomis. So the question is, we have to figure out Akolmo demand. Which of these two Tanoim are we saying would definitely agree? Reb Meir? Are you saying that Reb Meir would agree? Pshita, well, obviously Reb Meir would agree. Ad kan lo k'machayev Reb Meir hosam. You know why Reb Meir is being machayev over here in all cases of Sofek Bechor? El of a Sofek Bechor. Horo ba'ol of Koyin v'shneit Zodin. Because after all, the Koyin has a double argument against him. Either it's a Bechor or it's Cholin and I guess I'm not honest. Avol Sofek Meiser loy. But when it comes to Sofek Meiser, the Koyin has no rights to Meiser. Meiser is brought, if it was regular Meiser, when the Bet Mikdash is standing, then you bring it as a Korban, and the owner eats the meat of it. The Koyin doesn't get any portion of the Meiser.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Koyin and my Meiser will follow them.
Nothing more than that.
Nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
No benefits.
Right. So therefore, so obviously in that case, the Kohen can't say, well, either way I should be getting these Matonis, because either it's Meiser and I get it, you still told him, what are you talking about? If it really is Meiser, you don't get anything from it.
Could he choose to give the Kohen something?
Sure, he can choose whatever he wants. Yeah, yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No. He's fine. Okay. So obviously the mayor would agree in that case, it's Potter for Matonis, what's the Chiddush? The answer is, okay, Mauritama, Taima did a mayor delayed the Shtakach Teres Matonis. Again, going back to the discussion before, we might have mistakenly thought that a mayor's reason why he's Machayev in Matonis with a Sofek Bechor is not because bottle of Mishneh Tzadin, not because the Kohen has a double argument, a monofshef argument against him,
sure.
But rather because, right, you might have thought, or Meir says, the Shtachach Tzadis Matonis, you don't want people to forget about the mitzvah of giving Matonis to the Kohen, and therefore, after the Sopik Meister Nami, in which case that would apply even to Sopik Meister, because then you'd still have the problem that people are going to, if people see that you don't give Matonis from it, and they see you eating it pretty much like a whole animal, they're going to mistakenly think that you don't have to give Zerah L'chayim B'Kayim.
Then you're going to reason in reverse and say, they will think maybe now that a Masa Brenna is higher for Matonis.
No, but because, no, understand, if they give the Matonis to the Kohen, there's no harm here, right? But, no. So
that's
you,
why I was on.
Right, that's the point. So no, there's no harm in it. So once you have the mitzvah d'ami, you can give it to any Torah person to eat in your shlaim. Okay, so you would have thought that. So therefore, kamash malon, therefore the papa would be telling us otherwise, that that's not Reb Meir's reason. Reb Meir's reason has to do with the ball of Mishneh Tzadin. Okay, again, the question is, how would you have had a hava minute to think that his reason, that Reb Meir's reason is short to shtakach? The next Mishnah says, you see clearly over there again, it's just a matter of whether there's Khalif in Biyat Toyin, that only then is your, so the mayor would say that's Chayev over there, but no, that means, in other words, so you would say, therefore, that only, so fine, the mayor is saying any time that the Toyin has some kind of rights to it, has rights to it either way you look at it, then it's higher, but otherwise not. So what would be our Havah Minah to think that he thinks it's a different reason that we have to tell us or not? And the answer is, like before, Ma'ud Kamer of Meir after the Sophic Meister Machayev, you would argue maybe the Meir would hold his Chayev even with Sophic Meister in Matonis, even though there's no Ba'al of the Shnei Tzadin. He would say, in that case, why is the Mishnah presenting the Machloikas in where there's Chalifin involved? He would be just to tell you how far Rav Yossi goes in being Makel, the Potter Akhila Heich of the Kohen Baal of Mishneh Tzadin, where Rav Yossi says, in that case of Chalifin, even though the Kohen has a double argument against him, where you can say, either this is the Bechor, or it's not, but I accept the Matonis from it, either way, he's pattering him on the ground of also in his Zerah Tzadin. So you would think, maybe that's why the Mishnah presents on the two, when you have two animals that are suffering, right? But maybe you would say the Mishnah presents the Machlokas about that to tell us that even in that case, Rav Yossi is Makel, but to say the only case where he's Machmir is where there's no Chalifin, because fine, then there's no choice, but otherwise, as much as possible, Rav Yossi is Makel, but we would say maybe Rav Meir is actually Machmir even by Meister. Because in general, the Mishnah would rather tell us how far the one who is Makel goes in being Makel. Therefore, Kamash Malon, that is what Rav Papa wants to tell us, that no, don't understand the Mishnah that way. The Mishnah is mentioning the Machlokas in about Chalif of Biyat Koyin, because that and only that is the case they argue about. No. They don't argue about where there's no Chalif of Biyat Koyin, everybody agrees to that, as Rav Elazar said before, and they don't argue about Sopik Meister, everybody agrees with Potter. Okay.
It doesn't happen that often that Shabbos is pushing itself to come out at the same time.
You don't have to worry about it, but once you have it, then, you know, people see one time, people will get
to it. Rapapa is saying, don't worry about...
Rapapa is saying, don't worry about Meister. The Mishnah didn't fail to present the Machlokas about Meister, even though there is one, because it wanted to tell us that Rav Yossi is Makel. No, the Mishnah didn't mention that Machlokas, because there is no Machlokas. They both agree that by Meister, you're possible. Sophic Meister, you're possible. We said in the Mishnah, Nes Echa Man, we said if one of the two animals that are a Sopik dies, Reb Tarzan Omi Yachloku, so we said Reb Tarzan says you divide them, and then Reb Akiva said, Amos Mechaber Lavaram. So the question is, Amai Yachloku, so why, Reb Tarzan had said earlier in the Mishnah that you give the Koyan the fatter one, again, on the grounds that he said the fatter one is always the one that came out first. So why over here, all of a sudden, is he saying Yachloku? Because he said that the fatter, the stronger one, is usually the one that comes out first. So therefore, he says that one must be the actual Bechor. So it's Amai Yachloku. Why is your type saying you divide them? Nechti Ishamin Mr. Koyan. You see, if the fatter one died, then that was the one that belonged to the Koyan. Therefore, the Koyan's out of luck. Behind the Ichabal, the Balabais, and the one that's still alive is the one that belongs to the Balabais. The Kochush Mis, if the skinnier one died, the Balabais Mis, the Hayyid the Kayan, then the one that's left over belongs to the Kayan. What kind of Yachloku? Amr Rab Ami.
If the fat one dies?
If you're saying in the Reisha that Rab Tyson said you always give the fatter one to the Kayan.
Right.
In other words, he considers the fatter one as a Vadai Bechor.
Right.
Well, then what kind of Yachloku if one of them dies? Which one died? Was it the one that you're supposed to give to the Kayan or was it not? The answer is Amr Rab Ami calls it by Rab Tyson. Rab Ami says, you're right, Rab Tyson changed his mind. Reb Tarfit, so the Mishnah left it as it is. The Mishnah is also Mimikai. Once the Tanoim were used to, once the Talmidim were used to learning a Mishnah in a certain phrasing, then it's often left that way, even if he changed his mind. But Reb Tarfit changed his mind and said, you know what? It's true. Not necessarily always does the fatter one come out first. So we can't say necessarily the fatter one is definitely the Bechor. Might be the skinnier one is. And therefore, when one of them dies, then we're not sure which one was the Bechor or not, and therefore we divide.
Actually, most likely that the fatter one comes up.
Maybe. Okay. Fine. Then we said, Reb Akiva and Amos Mechavel of Araya. We said, Reb Akiva says, and Amos Mechavel of Araya. Amr Reb Chiya. So Reb Chiya says, let's give an analogy to explain, Reb Chiya Abba, Amr Reb Yechon, actually, Shikim Akubeta says, let's give an analogy to explain Reb Tarfin's and Reb Akiva's logic. Give a moshel to explain it. Moshel the Reb Tarfin, Lamar Dovadoma. What is Reb Tarfin's scenario where he says Yachloku, what is it like? L'shnayim she'skidu etzel roya. Suppose you have two people deposited animals for safekeeping by a shepherd, and they didn't take, no, nobody paid attention whose animal was whose. And then later on, one of the animals died. So you have one animal alive, and each one is claiming it. So what happens? Shemaniach roya b'neim l'mestalit. Okay, all the shepherd has to do is put the animal between them and say, I'm out of this. I have no further involvement in this. You guys work it out between yourselves. Tosfos discusses over here, would it mean that Yachloku, would it mean that there were certain cases where we would say Kol Da'alim Gvar? Fine, in any case, over here, it would be one of the scenarios where we say Yachloku, because neither one is really more muchtak than the other one, and therefore sort of Tarfin, similarly, says in our Mishnah that therefore you divide. So you're not sure which one belongs to the Kohen and which one belongs to the Easter.
I'd simply go, Albus would recognize it.
If he recognizes, of course, fine. But
they don't know.
But if they don't know, yeah. You know, like this, he says, I recognize it, and the other one also says, I recognize it, right? Yeah.
Fine,
it's
DNA.
Okay. Well, Marshall did about people of Mar Deva Dome. What kind of Marshall can you give to explain Rabbi Akiva's opinion? Where Reb Akiva says in the Mishnah, Amos Mechavel of Araya, which fine, I mean, obviously the Tarfin agrees that Amos Mechavel of Araya in general, but he says this is a special case like this, right? So what is Reb Akiva's case like? Lamar Davidim, La'echad Shehiskid Eso Balabayis, suppose one person deposits something for safekeeping by the Balabayis, and the Balabayis took the animal and put it among his own herds, and then one animal in the entire herd died, we're not sure if that's the one at all. So then, Shamot Mechavel of Araya. Now, when the guy comes to collect his Kikodin, then the Balabas tells him, if you can prove, if you know, if you can recognize which one is yours, if you can prove that one is yours, then fine. But if you're not sure, then fine. You want to prove, then fine. Shamot Mechavel of Araya, so it could be the dead one is yours. So therefore, by the same logic, Rabbi Kibble would say over here, the coin's not entitled to anything.
Why do we have to go through
Well, the question, one time, because the question is, Elba Mai Plegin. Well, in that case, then what's the actual argument? Then why does Reb Tarfin compare it to one scenario and Reb Akiva compare it to another scenario and arrive at their opinions that way? What's the underlying point? If we're saying that they're coming from two different principles in halacha, then what brings them to say that, well, that one principle or the other applies? So like this. Reb Akiva polig Reb Akiva polig b'shnayim she'ekidu etz roya shemaniach roya b'mastalik? Would Reb Akiva disagree on that din that if two people deposited by animals by a shepherd and one of them dies, that the shepherd can just put it between them and leave? Obviously, Reb Akiva agrees with that concept also. Okay, Tosfos mentioned, strictly speaking, and I'm asked, Rava points out over there that there's a slight difference. Did they take care to begin with to mention to him which one is which, and then later on he just got careless and forgot, or are we talking about where nobody paid attention to that in the first place? Okay, whatever, anyway. Is there a Tarfin polling the Echab Shehizkid Eitz HaBalabayis? Are you going to tell me that Tarfin disagrees when one person deposits an animal with the Balabayis? No, they both agree with those principles, so what are they actually arguing about? Amar Rava became a Rapapa, so Rava said, or some say Rapapa said, no, like this. Hakom moidu b'shnayim she'efkidu etz roya. Everybody agrees if you have two people that deposit it by the shepherd, shemaniach roya b'neim ha'mestalit, that the shepherd puts it between them and he goes away. And both of them agree over echad she'efkidu etz balabayis, shamayis mechavel avarayis. So what's the argument in our Mishnah? Lo nechlaku ela b'chassar balabayis v'roya koyin. What we're arguing about over here is, if you have, the animal is in the chotzer of the balabayis, and he's giving it to a shepherd who is a kohen. Now, by the way, Tosfos points out later on in the Masechta, usually shepherds are amei ha'aretz, and you're usually not supposed to give b'chorim and other such things like that to kohenim amei ha'aretz. On the other hand, Tosfos says that, okay, among other answers, fine, you can have this as one particular kohen that he regularly gives his matnes kohen to. Maybe he shouldn't be, because the guy's an amei ha'aretz, but still, he regularly gives it to him, so then fine. Okay. Anyway. in this case you're talking about, the animal is in the chot, so it's a royal koyin, right? Most royal amiyaris, obviously not all of them. I mean, the others were shepherds, the shvatim were shepherds, they were in amiyaris. Yeah, fine, but the point still remains, not necessarily all shepherds amiyaris, but by and large they are. Anyway, so you have a case over here where the animal is in the chotzer, the animal is still alive and standing in the chotzer of the balabais, and the koyan is pasturing all of the balabais of the animals. So what's the machlokes? Reb Tarfon sover aknuya kamakna lebachaseire. Reb Tarfon therefore holds that the balabas is being makne to the koyan of spot in his chotzer in order for the koyan to be zoicha in that bechor through kinyan chotzer. And because the balabas likes the idea that a mitzvah should be done with his money, he would like that the bechorim are going to be raised in his chotzer, so that'll be in effect for the duration, as long as the bechor is being raised over there, it'll be considered a joint ownership chotzer, because that way he's able to be machneh to the kohen. So therefore it's the equivalent of two people being machneh by one person. So now what do you have? It's like two people, because you have now the question. It's in the reshus of both of them. It's in the reshus of both of them, because it's a joint reshus between the balabais and the kohen. That's why Reb Tarfon compares it to the case of two people depositing by one shepherd. Because here you have this chotzer belongs jointly to the balabas and to the kohen, and that's how he's being machmir the bechor to the kohen. So therefore, now when the bechor dies over there, so it is in the possession of the two of them. So it's the equivalent of two of them having gone to a shepherd and deposited by him. Therefore, yachleku. Rabbi Akiva says, no, kibin de'islai p'seda, yeah, it's true a person would like to have a mitzvah done with his money, but that's when there's no hefset involved. That's when there's no hefset involved. Oh, one second. Over here, if there's a suffix, the balabai stands to lose if he's matching his chotzer to the kohen, because then, yeah, we're going to say, like with Tarfon, that he has to give half of the live animal to the kohen. So therefore, not necessarily. No, we're talking about Bechor. We're talking about Bechor, but the point still remains. In other words, we generally say a person would like to have a mitzvah done with his mama, and this comes up in more practical, more day-to-day areas of halacha. We know, for example, that halacha, you're allowed to borrow somebody's talis and shul, or somebody's tefillin and shul, as long as you wrap them up and put them away exactly the way you found them, because nichalele inish tzavid mitzvah l'mona, where there's no hefsed, where there's no chisar in case, a person would like to have a mitzvah done with his possession. So over here, Reb Tarfon applies the same rule. That's why he says, ultimately, when the animal dies, it was in the reshus of both of them. Therefore, that's it was in the reshus of both of them. So yachloiku. Whereas Reb Akiva says, yeah, but on the other hand, to begin with, the balabas knows if he does that, he stands to lose. If he gives the koyan a share in his chotzer in order to be machna him the animal that way, he stands to lose. Because if the animal dies, then we're back to what we said. Reb Tarfon is going to say half of the animal is going to go to the koyan. He doesn't want to do that.
So why don't we say more
simply? One second. Therefore, like machnim le midam, therefore Rabbi Akiva says he's not machnim him anything in his chotzer. And midam is anything. The havalik echot shehifkid is a balabai, so therefore the chotzer completely belongs to the balabas. Therefore, it's the equivalent of one person depositing something by the balabas. Shamos mechavel avaraya. You koyin want to say you have rights to this bechor, which the chotzer was never yours. It's in my rishus. Shamos mechavel avaraya. So that's the underlying machlokes. They both agree with the individual halacha, but they just disagree which halacha is going to be applicable over here, because is the Yisroel going to be willing to give over part of his chotzer to the kohen to raise the animals there or not?
Basically, we're saying, is there a kinyan chotzer or not?
Right. Well, is he machne him part of his chotzer in order to do kinyan chotzer?
Why don't we say that it's a pikkud of what he gives him?
Well, even if it's cotton, there has to be, you put it in the guy's reshus.
But you don't share 50-50 if the animal dies.
No, well, okay, but you don't know which one belongs to the koyan and which one belongs to
anyone.
Well, that's the point, though, what Rav Akiva is saying. Both Rav Akiva and Rav Tarfon are saying it's like a cotton. The question is just, do you have two animals over here with the original cotton, or one animal? In effect, Rav Tarfon says it's as if you had two animals over here, because even though it's only one physical animal, which died now, but Reb Tarfon says that that physical animal was in the reshus of both of them, and therefore yachloku. Whereas Reb Akiva says, no, it's only in the reshus of one of them. It's only in the reshus of the balabais, and therefore the kohen is going to be in the situation of a mitzvah mechavel avaraya.
And so it's true. Listen, the prove what?
You have to prove that this one was the bechor. You have to prove that this one that died was not the bechor. If you can prove that this one that died was not the bechor, fine, then I'll give you the other one. But as long as you can't prove it, then as far as I'm concerned, all you have is a dead body, and there's nothing you can do with a dead body or a bechor. Yeah. Right. No, the original case in our Mishnah was you had two animals where there's a suffix between them, but now we're saying one of them died, and the question is the kohen entitled to any part of the other animal since it was a suffix before? The Tyson said yes, and Rabbi Akiva is saying that. That obviously, right, usually when you say Hamotzi Mechabela V'raya, in many cases what it means is, yeah, there's no way to prove it. Hamotzi Mechabela V'raya means, yeah, fine, if you kohen want it, you would have to prove. Since you can't prove, you're not entitled to it. And that's what Hamotzi Mechabela V'raya often means. Yeah. And sometimes it means you're able to bring a raya. Yeah, if you're able to bring a raya.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, and you could have. I guess conceivably you could have.
Was not.
Well, this is true, but I don't think that has anything to do with that. But okay. Right. Okay.